change subjects to a very holy place. We are really lucky. Rabbi Schechter is here as our camp rav. Rabbi Schechter brings with him camp spirit, camp rav, and very much a camp love that goes throughout the entire camp. Rabbi Schechter really wants what's best for every single camper. He's looking out what's best for our neshamos as the rav, but he also wants what's best for every single person's goof and every single person as a whole person. That every single one of the campers and us should be enjoying camp experience, should be getting as much as you can out of the camp experience. And I will tell you, from the first day that Rabbi Schechter was here, I saw that. What was absolutely mind-blowing to me is the day after camp, the first year that Rabbi Schechter was here. And all the families that he got involved with during the year, who really lean on him and have leaned on him as a rub and as a strength in their life. So many of the families who are going through such difficult times look to a higher source. We all beg of Hashem for the rules. We all ask Hashem for help in this world. And the way that we look to that so many times is we cling to Rabbanim. And it is absolutely unbelievable to see how many families have clung to Rabbi Schechter and to his halachos and to his advice and to all that he has to say to them with everything. Rabbi Schechter has gone into homes. Rabbi Schechter has gone into hospitals. Rabbi Schechter has spoken at the bios. Rabbi Schechter has spoken at simchos. Rabbi Schechter has given brachos under chuppahs. It is absolutely beautiful, the connection that he makes with all of our campers and all of our staff. We're honored to have him with us and to have him as part of us, Rabbi Schechter.
Advice counselor at all. But what I find most powerful, at least when I'm here in the camp, is, and this could apply to everyone, I'm no different than anyone else. There are so many campers who are not looking for advice. They're not looking for us to say anything. Mrs. Kaufman and Ripley know very well that more often than advice that they're looking for is just an ear for them to be listened to. Because so many of them feel alone. And it's an overwhelming struggle for them to go through this experience, but it's so special when there are people who are here and designated just to be looking out for their well-being and to listen to them and to make sure that they don't feel alone. But outside of our campers, I know the campers are not here yet. I just want you to take a moment and think. Ripley mentioned how much ruach there was last night and how beautiful it is to see that there's so much energy, but there's a lot of intensity in this camp as well. And when you think about the almost paralyzing sense of responsibility that the senior administration of this camp takes upon themselves, many of you may go an entire session and not even notice it because they hide it very, very well. Think about Dr. Steinhurst, who is the medical director of this camp, and understand and appreciate. Number one, he left hundreds of patients behind at Sloan Kettering, all to be here with us and to make sure that our campers are going to have an amazing summer. He is a world-renowned doctor. Dr. Steinhurst has written the protocols for chemotherapy treatments that are used all over the world, just to give you an understanding. I've met with oncologists who are jealous of the fact that we are in the presence of Dr. Steinhurst. But think about it for a moment. He walks around, he wears a camp t-shirt and a sweatshirt, and he's joking around with everyone. But the sense of responsibility that he takes upon himself to have so many critically sick children all in one place under his care. Think about all the teams of doctors, EMTs, paramedics, and nurses who work under his care and understand what a responsibility it is. Think about the responsibility that your head counselors and your lifeguards and everyone on this campus takes upon themselves, and for that matter, every counselor and staff member. We all take a tremendous responsibility. Think about what it's like to be the posseg of this camp. I am not. Rabbi Yusef is the posseg of this camp. Think about what he takes upon himself. There are questions that come up every summer that deal with real pikuach nefesh. Questions that are so decisive. Questions that we need to determine how we're going to spend Shabbos, how patients who are on ventilators are going to be treated, how we're going to take care of things on this campus. These are questions you may never even realize are going on behind the scenes, but there's an awesome sense of responsibility. I'll tell you, every summer before I come, I'm terrified. Because I think there's a lot of weighty discussion that goes on here. But the way that we do it is, we make sure that none of us are ever alone. We make sure that all of us have each other. Because lo tov hayosa adam levado. Because lo tov hadavar asher atah oseh, we cannot leave alone. Ricky Schwartz cannot lead alone. Nobody, Ricky Zuckerman, I'm sorry. Nobody can lead alone. Dr. Steinhurst cannot lead alone. And it's because of all of you who are here that we have the strength and the courage to lead together. And we need to pay attention to that and to realize that we're here to give each other chizuk. I love talking to the staff members. I love talking to the campers. But something that really bothers me more than anything else is when a staff member is caught up on something that's so silly and so small. I know that we're all human beings and there are things that bother us, but there are much larger things going on here. Let's keep perspective. Let's remember, we're all here to enjoy together. We're here to give pleasure to those who need it most. And let's realize that what we're here for is Ish Esreyeli Azaru Ve'elapid Yomar Chazak. We're here to strengthen each other through a very, very special experience, an exhilarating experience that we're all going to have together. I think the common theme between a number of parshas that we just read, Ba'alosa, Shlach, and Korach this week again, is that the Torah highlights over and over again the premier leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu and the unusual character and qualities that Moshe Rabbeinu embodies and what he means to all of us. But when you think about it, go back to the first incipient stages of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. The Medrash tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu was given a number of names. He was given the name Avigdor and Tuvia. So many beautiful names. Tuvia means he was told to Hashem. He was a good person. He was born perfect. He is a great human being. He remember Moshe Rabbeinu for all eternity as Moshe. And we know it's because the Torah says, Kimin ha-mayim mishusim, because Moshe Rabbeinu was taken from the water when he almost lost his life. I tell you, that's very strange. Some Egyptian princess happened to be walking by the river, noticed Moshe Rabbeinu, and as a result of that, we neglect all these beautiful names, and we resort to her name. Sounds a little strange. And aside from that, the Hirsch points out that if you know Dikduk, if you know Hebrew a little bit, it's really the wrong name. It should be Mashui. He is the one who was taken. Why did we refer to him as Moshe? He was not the one who took. He was the one who was taken. Explain to Hirsch, there are two categories of people in the world. There are the givers in the world, and there are the takers in the world. There are those who are always going to be depending on others, and there are those who people always know they can depend on. Moshe Rabbeinu was being taught from the very beginning stages of his own life that his job was not to be a mashui. You can look at yourself and pity yourself and blame things on others and look to others to lift you up and to take care of you, or you can be the person who is always going to be on guard, to be there for others, to be the one who is the Moshe, the one who is going to extricate those from their suffering, the one who is going to be the one who others will always depend on, the one who is going to go around and be Moshe others and take them out of their situation that is painful, that is difficult. That was what Moshe Rabbeinu was all about. That's what characterizes him. And that is how we remember him. It's interesting that when the Torah says in Parshas Bereishis that when a couple gets married, we are told, Al-Kein Yazom Vishas Adin Ve'Asimo. Now, I don't know. Is it so terrible for a couple to live near their parents? Is there nothing they can learn or gain from being close in proximity to their parents' home? Why do we encourage every young couple that gets married to leave their parents' home? The younger explains perhaps the reason why is because, obviously, we don't want people moving away from home. It's not what the Torah means. What the Torah means to emphasize is to leave the mindset behind. When we are young children, we are completely dependent. We turn to our parents for everything. We cannot help ourselves. But as we go through the journey of life and as we continue to grow, we become people who are dependent on no one else but ourselves, obviously after this miracle, but we are the ones who others depend on as we grow older. And that is what it means, as we grow older and we start this new phase of life and we get married and we move out of the house, we make sure that we leave behind that mindset of selfishness. And we think about being a selfless human being. We think about a person who is not just focused on themselves, who is not self-centered, but a person who thinks broader, a person who sees the bigger picture, a person who understands there are so many in the world that I can make a difference in their lives, to become a giver, and to make sure that we leave that habit of taker behind. And that really is what we're here to do, to live selfless lives, to be here for other people, to allow those who need to depend on us, to make sure that we give selflessly every moment and every day, and you'll see it's exhausting, but it's the most exhilarating exhaustion you will feel, because you understand that every bit of exhaustion is only because you are giving so much and you are impacting so profoundly and you are making such a difference in someone else's life. Let me close with a story. I know we have a busy schedule today, a lot to do. But a story that I read last year that I was so taken by. It's a story from 1950, Parsha Shlach, which is this past week's Parsha. 1950, 72 years ago. It was a young boy, Yisrael Meir Lau, who was a survivor of the Holocaust, who at a very young age made it to Eretz Yisrael. He was adopted by his uncle. The rest of his family was killed out. And he was taken to a community, to a yeshuv, referred to as Kiryat Motzki. And in this kiryat, in this yeshuv, everyone was so excited about this young child. They all tried to help him as much as they could. Every time he came to shul, people were crowding around him, just trying to make him feel comfortable. It came a few months before his bar mitzvah. And one of the elderly gentlemen in shul walked over to him and says, you know, many of the young men, when they become a bar mitzvah, they lay Kriyas HaTorah that Shabbos. Would you like to do the same? And he says, yes, I would. But who's going to teach me? I don't have a father. And this man says, you stay every night after Maror, I'll make sure that you'll know exactly how to lay your parsha. Well, that's what they did. Every night, months in advance, he's preparing with this elderly gentleman in town, comes closer to Parsha Shlach, and everyone is so excited to celebrate his bar mitzvah together with him. And they hung up signs all over Kiryat Motzkin that this Shabbos there's always only going to be one minyan in town. No one else is going to daven anywhere else because all of us want to celebrate the bar mitzvah of Yisrael Me'erlav, the Yasov, the orphan, who lost his entire family in the Holocaust. That Shabbos, shul was so crowded. There was no room in the shul itself. They had to open the windows and people were crowding around outside to listen in to the minyan that was davening inside. And the whole town was so excited. It comes time in the middle of Chazaras HaShatz. One of the people in town walks up to him and gives him a talis and he says, you know, I know that you don't have someone to give you a talis. I decided I'm going to buy one for you. I want you to feel like your own person. Now you have something of your own. And he was so excited, he puts the talis on, he's getting all ready. They take out the sefer Torah, he starts walking up toward the bima. As he's walking up, he notices from the other side of the shul that there's an elderly gentleman who's walking up to the bima at the same time. Couldn't figure out what was going on. The gavai immediately noticed what was happening. The gavai saw it was Rav Moshe of the Balkorei, who lays from the sefer Torah every Shabbos. And he realized that there was a misunderstanding. And he turns to Rav Moshe and he says, listen, there's a bar mitzvah this Shabbos. You're not going to be laying. Rav Moshe turns back to him and he says, I understand, but nobody told me, and I prepared. The Gabbai says, well, now you're informed. Now you told me. There's a bar mitzvah this Shabbos. Rav Moshe proceeds to yell at the Gabbai in front of the entire shul. And he says, the one Shabbos, when there's such a large crowd, when there's people all around this building, outside, inside, and I can finally show everyone how proficient I am at the skill of laying, you're going to take away this opportunity from me? You're not going to allow me to lay in this Shabbos of all Shabbosos? And the Gabbai turns back to him and he says, I appreciate your feeling, but nobody's here for you. They're not interested in hearing you. They're all here because Yisrael Me'erlav is having his bar mitzvah. They all want to celebrate with him. Rabbi Lau, 13 years old, walks up to this man, puts his arm around his shoulder, and he says, look, I'll make a deal. The way I see it is, I'm a young man, I'm going to have many, many years in the future to lay Parsha Shlach. How about this? This Shabbos, you should lay Parsha Shlach. Next year, when we get the Parsha Shlach, I'll do it. And he walked off the bima, and that was his bar mitzvah. Yisrael Me'erlav said he was so honored that the first mitzvah he was able to perform as an adult was learning how to be selfless, was learning how to make sure that he put other people's needs before his own. And he said because the Ribbono Shel Olam saw that he was able to close his mouth one time out of respect to somebody else, it's been over 70 years, and the Ribbono Shel Olam has made sure that his voice has been heard ever since all around the world. He told the story last year. I was so moved by the story. I'm not sure where everybody else in the shul was and why they didn't get involved. But it says something about a person's character. If you read the biography of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and he's one of many, but the story is told, Shabbos afternoon, his wife passed away in Shabbos Tzedek Hospital. And he decided, he knew it was going to be a lot of commotion, the week of Shiva, the whole Levaya, there were going to be tens of thousands of people who he was going to speak to. He decided he was going to walk home after Shabbos from Shabbos Tzedek Hospital to Shabbos Chesed, a 20-minute walk. But he didn't want to be bothered. He knew if he took the elevator down after Shabbos, he was going to meet someone in the elevator, so he decided to take the stairwell. He walks down the stairwell, goes down one flight of stairs, bumps into an old Talmud of his. And he says, Rebbe, Rosh Hashiva, I can't believe I'm seeing you here. I want you to know my wife just had a baby. Shabbos afternoon. He turns to the young man and he wishes him a mazel tov. The man says to him, Rebbe, maybe you'd like to come in and wish my wife a mazel tov. Maybe you'd like to speak here. And he says, well, maybe you should go inside and make sure that your wife wants my visit before you invite me in. He says, sure. He goes inside, he talks to his wife, he comes right back in, he says, my wife would be honored. Of course you should come inside. And he comes inside, he talks to this couple, and they're describing to him how many years they were struggling with infertility and all the different treatment options they were going through, and everything that they had overcome to have this child. And finally, the child was born healthy. And I asked Rosh Hashanah about for a bracha for them as a couple, for them as a family, for their new child. He spent close to a half an hour with them. And he finally left. That night, for anyone who's ever been to Yerushalayim, you've seen Pashkevim all over the walls. And there were signs that were hung up all over Yerushalayim, informing people of the Patira, the death of Rosh Hashanah Arba's wife. This topic was mortifying. He came home that night and he realized that Rosh Hashanah Arba had just lost his wife. And he stopped it for a half hour on the way to prepare for his own wife's Leviah. He came to the Shiva. He was so ashamed of himself. And he turns to Rosh Hashanah and he's broken and he's crying and he says, I'm so embarrassed, I don't even know what to say. The fact that I held you up for a half hour is one thing. But I held you up for a half hour after your wife passed away, after you were walking down the stairwell to have a few quiet moments, and I was so insensitive. And Rosh Hashanah turned to him and he said, what does my personal suffering have to do with your child that was just born? Why wouldn't I spend a half hour wishing you a mazel tov and taking care of your needs? What does it have to do with what I'm going through? Great people know how to think beyond themselves, know how to live selfless lives. And we know anyone who's made a commitment to be here this summer is that kind of person. Obviously signed up to live that kind of life. Ashrechem v'ashrechem. How lucky we are to have each other. How lucky you are to have this experience of learning what it means to live 2 weeks of your life in the most selfless way possible. Everything we're going to do, every decision we're going to make, is made for the betterment, not of ourselves, but of our campers. For the betterment of everyone on this campus. How lucky we are, Ashreinu Matov Chalkeinu, how lucky we are to service HaKadosh Baruch Hu's children, to uplift and enrich their lives, to give them the opportunity to have hope and to have strength. You know, Rifki just mentioned about Sophie. She didn't give you all the details, obviously, because she couldn't. But let me just say, it was so clear to anyone who was here that summer that the counselors and the staff members of Camp Simcha kept that girl alive an extra 2 weeks. I have no doubt about it. The doctors had given her a horrible prognosis. Months before camp, there was no realistic reason why she should have still been in this world, and she is not the only one. Adina is another one. We know many, many of these campers who stay alive because they had hope, because we gave them hope, because we gave them encouragement, because we allowed them to see that there is something happy for them to live life for. It's such a tremendous schus. Just think about it. We allow Chilul Shabbos for the sake of these campers, and we'll talk more about that before Shabbos. But we allow HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shabbos to be violated to do something to enhance the lives of these campers. Understand what a privilege it is that every day in the next 2 weeks you're going to be here, you'll have the opportunity to do so much to enhance their lives, to give them hope, to give them strength, give that courage. So Telefun and Kyle and Fayo, you should all have strength in this really special and incredible mission that you're on. You should all come out enriched from this amazing experience that we're all about to have.
so much, Rabbi Shachter. They're all just another few short things.
Thank you
so very much. Anybody going to New York? Who's going to New York?